Okay, everybody. Hello and welcome to Life Journeys with Serena. We are having a pretty exciting morning over at my house right now. I have some fun special guests for everybody. Today we have a wonderful conversation that I'm so excited about with Russell and Mbasa. And right now I've got baby Shelby with me too. And we've just had a wonderful morning with radio. But the fun development is our indoor cat, who is not supposed to be outside, just ran outside. So my husband is currently trying to catch him, and they are playing a fun game of hide and seek. So you'll probably hear my dog, who's getting stressed out about his brother being stuck outside. And we're also pretty close to nap time, and I'm here with our beautiful baby boy. So you guys, we are just rolling with it. And if I need to, we're just going to go on a break. But also, I totally feel like Russell and Mbasa can take over. And they can just keep chatting too. So we have, I'm so excited because they basically get to do a 2-hour special today. They are, hold on, we got the cat right next to the door. Go ahead, go get him. He just went that way. Russell and Mbasa are doing a 2-hour special basically because they are taking over and hosting Fresh 55 at noon Pacific time right after my show, which they hosted a few weeks ago and were our first hosts of the new show. And I absolutely love their energy and I'm so excited for our time today. And both Russell and Mbasa are advisors at One to Listen. And Russell wrote these beautiful little bios for the two of them. And if Russell, you are a master of words, I swear. He said that I could put the, you know, say this in any variation, but I just have to read what you wrote because it is absolutely gorgeous. And I feel like it sums up the two of you so well. So we have Mbasa, who is a spirit artist of healing and freedom. And she uses her gifts to bring, or rather to invite people into their own space of creation where fun and play become serious antidotes for whatever fails or ails. It's just so beautiful. And I feel like that matches up how I feel Mbasa's energy so well. And then Russell is like a spiritual lifeguard and life guide. I love that. He balances an understanding of science and spirituality to help people leverage their crises and opportunities to achieve next level corrections or enhancements. It's a practical approach to ascension activation. And wow, I just think that is just such a beautiful, beautiful way to sum up our own connection with energy. Because there's so many ways that all of us tap into spirit and tap into our intuition. And what a beautiful way to summarize it. And so today we're going to be having some wonderful conversation just about intuition and how we can connect with other people through our intuition and through energy in creative and fun ways. And also just who knows where the conversation's going to take us. I feel like we will be talking about everything and anything, and this I have a feeling this will not be our only time that the three of us get to chat. But if you guys want to engage with us or ask any questions, go ahead and leave a comment in the chat room, and you can do that by going to 12radio.com and clicking on the chat button on the left hand side of the screen, and it will take you over to our Facebook group where it is also called 12 Radio. And if you haven't been there before, make sure you request to join, not to follow, right? You want to make sure you join, and they'll ask you a couple questions just to make sure you're real, and I'll make sure you get in and are able to join the conversation. And if you scroll down, you'll see a banner with a picture of me on the beach with my pup. And go ahead and leave a comment right there under that post. And it looks like we already have some people in the chat room. We have Renee, my dear. Wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us. And then Jean is here as well. Blessings right back to you, Jean. I love that you're here with us, and thank you so much for joining us today. And Pamela, my love, thank you for being here. She says, hello to all. Happy to be here with everyone listening while I work. Oh, I love that. Yeah, fit us into your guys' schedule however you can. That is just so wonderful that you get to listen to us while you work. That's perfect. And Quelly says, grand afternoon, Serena, Mbasa, and Russell. Thank you, Quelly. My Bay Area girl who is no longer in the Bay Area, but I always love that you have that connection with this wonderful part of NorCal with me. Okay, you guys, we are gonna just jump right into it. And Russell, I just want to welcome you in. I know Mbasa is in the process of getting a couple things set up, so she's gonna join us when she is ready.
No. Mbasa is
here.
Is always of becoming. She's always in the process of becoming. She is a work of art. She's a beautiful work of art. And yes, indeed, I am here in my perfecto in all of my lovely imperfections.
Oh, beautiful.
Right on time, right on time.
That is right on time.
How about that for landing on your feet like a cat?
And you guys, you know what? This is wonderful timing because my husband just brought the cat inside too. So we all just needed 10 minutes or so of a buffer. And now I think the whole family is ready to go.
Well, I was thinking of it as the whole family is co-hosting the beginning.
Yes.
So you, Shelby,
exactly.
The cat.
I know, we've got the baby, we've got the husband, we got the cat and the dog. I know, it's always the whole house is always here in the background when it's me with radio. And I feel like everyone gets a little glimpse into what it's like when I'm, what my side of things is when I'm producing, when they get to listen to my show. It's so a bunch of warm, wonderful energy. But you guys, I want to kick off our conversation by talking about the power of food. Okay. It is something that the two of you mentioned. I can't remember if it was on your show when you hosted Fresh 55 or if it was in a conversation that we were having after. But Russell, you mentioned something about how Mbasa is started. I can't remember if I'll let you guys take over from here. But how you guys are able to connect with people's energy and then design the food or the meal for the night based off of what they may be lacking or what support they need. And this is something that I also do. And I'm just so curious about if I heard that correctly when we were chatting last time. And just I've just really been pulled to lead our conversation this way. So, yeah, I'm curious. What is your guys' experience there? And how did that start for both of you?
Mbasa, do you want to go first? I'll go first. She may have.
Yeah, you go first.
So the whole conversation about food for me began quite a while ago. And it was before the mainstream really picked up on that food can be medicine, as the ancients always taught.
Mm-hmm.
What we're coming to is an understanding that food is actually more than medicine. Food is information, right?
Mm.
So when we think of how does the food arrive to the place where you can consume it, we look at, you know, the rhythms of sunlight and the flow of air.
Hmm.
And the waves of moisture and the magnetism of minerals dance together throughout the biosphere to become sustenance for us, right?
Yeah.
And it is translated into what we need according to the patterns of the information. So the information in us recognizes the information in the food, right? Which is mm-hmm. rhythmic, all right? And then everything we need to translate that symphony into our symphony is created by our DNA and RNA like that, okay? And nobody mm-hmm. is confused about that DNA, RNA, proteins, enzymes. Are in basic high school biology, they group them together and call them what? Informational macromolecules. That's a category they call it.
Right.
So sometimes when we're working with people, we'll ask, you know, what information does this person need to be perfectly known? And then you rest that inquiry and allow the answers to bubble up. Right? And I think the new chefs, the spirit chefs, are going to have a different focus than the conventional chefs, which, bless their hearts, and I love it. The common mainstream chef these days is really there to entertain you and to demonstrate their artistry. Okay? And what we're adding is that if those two elements are there, the primary element for spirit chef is when you arise from the table, when you get up from the table, you will be perfectly nourished from this meal. And so that's
Russell, can you expand on spirit chef? I think that's a term that some people may not be familiar with, and it's something that I absolutely love to dive into.
I just made it up just now.
I use the same words.
Say that again.
I use the same words. I also call it being a spirit chef, and I think it's something that, maybe it is a thing.
My mirror neurons borrowed it from you, because that's I said it that way.
Is it really?
But it fits, right?
It does.
So thank you for informing me that I didn't make it up.
No, definitely not.
But it is apropos, right?
It is.
So what we're doing is, when I say perfectly nourished, I mean from head to toe physically. Also, we know that people experience things emotionally through their food, right? Mm-hmm. And and there are many people who are reminded of their connection with source through food.
Absolutely.
So can a meal deepen your source awareness, feed your spirit, and nourish your body all and revitalize your body all at the same time? And we say yes. Right?
Absolutely.
No. So as I was graduated from being a young trainee and became a holistic provider, the way I would work is someone would come in and we would do the body scan thing. And by body scan, I mean, I guess I have to define that, because nowadays body scan means have a machine analyze all your parameters. So what we were taught to do was instinctively connect with the person who was coming or there and give them a reading. Okay. Mm. And so this is what medical intuitives do, right? And so each trainee, each client, each seeker that came around would get a custom herbal remedy from me. I didn't know Ombasa was doing almost the exact same thing, because I started this before we met. And so when years later, after I've been doing this for a while, Ombasa invited me to go with her to the health food store. And back then, like, people think of health food stores now as like the GNCs and the other kind of nutrient vitamin shop where everything is in bottles. Back then, you would go into a health food store and there'd be, like, in the cereal aisle, there'd be a whole row of herbs from the floor up to the top. And we were living in Atlanta. We were both out in and out of Atlanta a lot. So there were two. There was one store called Sevananda, which was at that time the largest health food co-op in the country, or maybe just the southeast. I'm not sure. And then there was one on the black side of town called Uhuru, which had a different set of herbs. And so between the two of them, we could get just about anything.
Right.
That we wanted. And so that on that day, I watched Ombasa walk up and down the aisles and gather ingredients for a trainee, client, seeker that she had never met. And that elevated my game, because I was like, well, I gotta get a scan right in front of them. And so I started playing around with that before we ever met business, or before they arrived business. And I started having my remedies ready when they got there, and they still worked. And then I said, well, let's do this with the food. And so if I had guests coming, I would meditate on what they needed to be nourished, right? Mm-hmm. And even if I didn't have the ingredients, I would do the rite of grace and induce. So grace was originally an alchemical rite. Nowadays, people who say grace pretty much have it as a gesture of gratitude. Okay, which is great and powerful. But originally, the rite of grace was released so that people who might be challenged by what, so that the food can become exactly what is needed for that person, for that group. Mm-hmm. And if there was any negative things, like, I mean, we're talking about the rite of grace came through before refrigeration and all that kind of stuff. So what if there were parasites? What if there was toxins from botulism and all these kinds of things? The rite of grace was meant to not only eliminate those, but perfect the food for the diners. So that's old school religious magic. That's how it was meant. That was one of the original meanings of rite. Okay, so let's do that. Because I didn't always have a huge cupboard of every possible ingredient for any random guest, right?
Sure.
So then it became about being present enough to induce into them, to add the information that might be missing from the ingredient. You get that?
Right. Well, and how powerful and freeing is it that that no matter what the ingredient is before you, it has the potential to hold exactly what you need.
Exactly. And so that was the evolutionary arc that I took there. And it really got solidified when I used to go hang out at the Hindu temple, still in Atlanta. There was a Hindu temple on Ponce de Leon. And when I was a student, I started going, because, every Wednesday and Saturday, it was free food.
As a student, that's what you have to do, right?
But as they say, hey, this guy might become a monk one day. And I didn't lead them on, but I had no intention of becoming a Hindu monk. But they assigned a brother to me who helped me understand what was going on. And I got a copy of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. And as you may know, the names, the pronouns and the formal names, they're very difficult to pronounce.
Right.
So he helped me with the reading. But one day he said to me, when we get the food, we call it by one name. And no amateur monks are allowed in the kitchen. Only advanced monks are allowed in the kitchen. And when it comes out, we don't even call it by the same name anymore. I was like, these cats are serious.
Yes.
They're not. I mean, like, you don't call water wine, and you don't call wine water. So they've done the transmutational process, and it, for them, in every way, it is entirely different. It is entirely blessed.
Wow.
And so that took it up another level of seriousness, right?
Yeah.
That, I was like, that's not playing around.
Oh, no.
So that's the whole thing about the food based on that. I hope I answered your question.
You did, with a beautiful story. I think the wonderful thing about your experience there is that there's just a really natural relationship, it seems like, that you have between the interaction that we have with food. And I think so often we take that for granted, and we don't recognize the opportunity that we have with every piece of food that we put in our mouth. Because, people are always oftentimes asking, where can I bring more intention into my life? I'm not able to meditate. I can't stay focused. How do I bring that focus and that consciousness into my daily practice? Or they aren't, you know, there is all these excuses that people have. And there's something that is so simple, but so powerful about this concept of our relationship with food and how we choose to interact with it. Yeah. Amasa, do you want to jump in and add anything?
Yeah, sure. So many things came to me about alchemy and all of these things. And I think it was 1993, I started a network called the Natural Healers Network. It was one of the first health networks here in Atlanta. And right after that, I was doing events at the library, started out. And I remember somebody wanted to interview me for a magazine. I forget the name of it. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to, it was like they were leading me. And hearing you talk just now, both of you, it just reminded me of, they were saying, at the time, it was vegetarian. It wasn't vegan, right? So they wanted, it was a vegetarian magazine. And so they weren't talking vegan at that time. So they were they were trying to lead me to say that's the only way. You know, the vegetarianism is the only way. And I've never been a groupie, okay? And so it wasn't my answer. My answer was, that there's a man who lived to be 120, and most of the days he ate a big fat pork chop, and he had a big fat cigar, and he had a glass of Jack Daniels every night after he came in. But the key was, he was not stressed. He went to bed with the chicken, and he got up with the chicken, and he was the most peaceful man you wanted to know. And he took it to 120, and then he just decided he was out. So for me, that was my answer in the magazine. Of course, I was the rebel after that.
Not what they expected you to say, I'm sure.
That is not what they expected me to say, but it needed to be said because we already know what we know about what's good for us. And again, it goes back to the question about, you know, the alchemy, the food for the body. Two things is, you know, the food the very best thing to do in anybody's situation is to tap into what's good for you. You know, you need to tap into your own body wisdom to know what is good for you. That's the top and the bottom line and in between and on the sides and spinning around and turning it upside down. That is what that is. So if you can get to that, you never have to worry about, oh, don't eat that. Don't eat this. Oh, this is bad because, again, you know, what people are hollering these days is that you can't eat nothing. It's like, okay, what? You know, it's like everything got a problem, okay?
I know.
So at this time, it's time to really get it tapped into that body wisdom. And Russell was talking about the herbs and the store and everything. And I remember that time, and it really puts a different spin on every adversity has something of equal or greater value because at that time I was in a really major turning point because my children, I have four children and they all wanted to go stay with their dad and they were like going into their teens and I couldn't say no, you know what I mean?
Right.
But they were like my little buddies. I mean, from day one, they were stair steps. And so, you know, they wanted to go, and I couldn't say no because they were only going on the summer, and they thought it was fascinating that they wanted to go down there and live in Florida. And I said, okay. So I said it begrudgingly because they were, like I said, they were my crew. We were
of course.
We didn't do nothing. So they went down, and I was devastated. Every time the school bus would come by, vroom. I would bust out crying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was an adversity for me. It was an adversity for me that turned into a blessing for me and other people because
in that grieving or release and all of that, what I started hearing was that I needed to work on the feet. And I was like, the feet? I'm not a feet. I'm not handle foot fetish. Oh, no. You're not going here. Everybody know I'm a fool. Look, everybody know I'm a fool for spirit, but I was like, a feet?
Right.
So I started asking, well, what is it? What is it? Is it reflexology? No. You know, and I should have prefaced this that most of my spiritual walk has been with Imhotep and being trained by Imhotep, you know, and the spirit of Imhotep has been with me the whole time. So that's why, you know, I'm not pretty much, I probably why, I don't want to say that's why, but that is probably one of the reasons why it comes easy for me to do stuff that might be considered crazy.
Right, sure.
Okay, come on, y'all. Come on, choir. You know how people.
I know. I'm speaking. You're speaking my language here. I love this. You just keep going.
Yeah. So I'm just like, come on, y'all. So so when I heard this, and I was like, okay, so is it reflexology? No. Is it that, you know? And so do I need to get cards? No. You don't need to. So it ended up that it was one person that said she was going to move to somewhere. And this is how it happened. This is how it began. She said she was moving somewhere and that she was leaving that Monday or something like that. So Spirit told me to make up something. I got those big apple juice jugs, gallons, whatever they are, 5 gallons. I don't know how much it is. Russell, you know.
They were
glass.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah. And so I had a few of them from having the apple juice. And so I cleaned, you know, and I made a big pot of, I had these huge pots that I was guided to use my left hand. And to always use my left hand, and I wouldn't know how much to put in of what it is. So I always had a whole lot of different herbs. Wow. And so I would have these pots, and Spirit said, put this in it, put that in it, and this for this first concoction, I call it that, for lack of a better word. I like to call it elixir. How about that? Okay, I like elixir better.
Yeah, okay.
For this first pot, I was hearing, pour all this cayenne in there. And I was like, wait a minute. You know what I mean? And I started, you know, saying, well, wait a minute. So when I got finished, the bottles, I poured it in the bottles after it cooled off, but I put all the herbs in it, let it sit overnight. Mm-hmm. I put the things in the bottle because I was supposed to see her that night. And so I put this stuff in the bottle, and it was so red. I was like, oh, my God, this is going to burn her to death.
Right. You don't play with cayenne, I swear.
So you don't play with cayenne. So I said, okay, I trust you. I trust you completely. Mm-hmm. Let's go. So that night, I fast forward. I went over to her house, and she was staying with someone. And the teenagers were there, and they were looking at me coming in there, toting these bottles, looking what I get.
Oh, my gosh.
They thought I was absolutely, you know what, we ain't going to say that word. So I said, okay, nope, I got to follow through, like always. Mm-hmm. So it was nowhere to actually do her feet, because this is the feet now we're talking about. There's nowhere to do this, put this concoction in the bowl and do her feet in the house because it was just too tight. But they had a back porch and it was cold. It was wintertime. It was January. It was freezing out there on the back porch and there was no heat out there. So we brought a heater out there. And so remember the cayenne now. So we got the heater out there, got her feet in the water, and I'm looking up at her. Is you okay? You okay? Because I never told her it was cayenne. I just listened to Spirit. I kept asking her, looking at her face, putting more in there. You look at her face. You know?
Oh my gosh. Right. Waiting for the pain.
Right. She said, no, this feels good. This feels good. So then her grandmother, who was on the other side, came in and worked my hands. She was the one that worked my hands that time, you know, to be able to move and get whatever was she was dealing with. She told me while I was working on her that because she was a dancer, that she had sprained the muscles in her legs. Hmm. And you know what Kyan does, right? For that.
I don't, actually.
You know what Kyan does?
Okay. No, I don't.
Major anti-inflammatory, so.
And she That's what I would have assumed, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She was in total pain. And her grandmother was there. And it was just the first and best session of that. That was just, I mean, because I had to go all the way on trust, you know what I mean? And I was in a cold room, and we were no longer cold because what? The cayenne. What?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that little reason was there. Yeah, and this was the dead of winter. So I just wanted to bring that in and talk about the intuition, the trust, the herbs, the food, whatever, the alchemy, and the love. So I'm going to pass that back over.
Oh my gosh, that is, I love that you shared that story. And the thing that really stuck out to me so much is just how you need to have that trust. Otherwise, what are you doing? Right? It is blind trust in that sense of you have no clue where you're going.
I had no clue. No.
But how beautiful is it that you gave yourself over in that trusting way? It's just so beautiful.
Right.
Yeah.
I always say I'm a fool for the creator, and people look at me, especially Christians, they'd be like, what? You're a fool for the creator? What do you mean?
Right.
You know.
Let me split a little hair right quick. Because in real life, there's no such thing as blind trust. There's blind faith.
Mm.
There's no such thing as blind trust. So when you have someone who is experienced and that kind of thing, so let me say it this way. Trust comes from understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the Black community, so there's this trend to say, well, I'm not going to use the word understand because it means this, and then I'm going to overstand because I don't want to be beneath nothing. So when we do the etymology of this, the two etymological roots for the word under, as a prefix, and one of them is the one that the word understanding is most associated with, which is to be in the midst of something.
Hmm.
It's not an over or under. So when some of these fancy people say, I'm going to understand and oversee, it's already in the word. Right. So to understand means to be in the midst of a thing. And over in scripture, they describe to be in the midst of a thing is to be with the source of all existence, right?
Mm.
Because in the midst of all is the source of existence, is God, is whatever you want to call it. You see what I'm saying? So trust is the sublimation of faith. It is the wine from the water. It's the lead from the, it's gold from the lead, right? Mm. So faith starts people off, but you know, it becomes understanding as one stands in the midst of presence.
Hmm.
And then you can just do it.
Right. And then you just let it, it's almost as if you have to, the word coming to mind is submit, but it feels like you have to hand over that. And find comfort within it, right? It is that
it's like improv and jazz, right? You do practice the fundamentals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're playing jazz, or when you're doing improv, you know the structure and you're familiar with it and you're comfortable and you understand. And so then you without resistance provide what you're going to provide,
right?
Yeah, same right. thing.
And there's knowledge and practice that goes into that as well with yes. time and presence and consciousness in that practice.
Yes. So she was already operating beyond faith.
Mm-hmm.
But like with Absolutely. The jazz, when it's time for you to improvise, you're living into something that you're familiar with. So it's not blind.
Hmm.
So it's just blind trust.
But the blind faith trust is a beautiful space to be within.
State. Trust is like freedom. These are primordial states.
Mm. Absolutely. I love that you caught that.
Freedom, trust, yeah. I just wanted to sort of carve that out a little bit. You know,
no, I love that you do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It feels like there's also an involuntary aspect of it when you are able to make that distinction and shift from attempting trust into something that is blind faith in that way. And for me, when I'm able to really fall into what I call my connection to energy, and my connection to spirit is less religious and is a relationship that I have with energy that I prioritize and value. And it is that blind faith that I love when I'm able to fall into that headspace, when I'm able to really give myself over in that sense and see where it leads me, is something that I love. I get to have that as a part of my life. And it's something that I do all the time with food. And it's something that I'm planting a garden this year, and I'm doing it as I'm planting my garden as well. And taking, as much information as I can from the pro gardeners, and there's so much science that goes into it, and I'm trying to blend that knowledge with intuition. And I think that is a practice that we all are able to implement into very surprising different parts of our lives, whether it's food or religion or gardening or love or, right? There's so many ways that we can balance that.
Yeah. So you want to talk about your relationship to the plants a little bit and
sure.
how you do that?
Yeah. Sure. I would love that. Absolutely. Where are you? I'll let you run that. Go ahead.
Well, in a minute, I'm going to tell a story, but the same dynamic that goes with the food goes with the plants and the animals that we talked about before, right? And you get it intellectually and from anecdotal stories about how the ancestors and the Aboriginal healers operate. And even, you know, some very powerful stories, like in the early 90s, the UN had the international Year of the Indigenous Healer. And the indigenous healers from around the world had gotten together and said, look, the pharmaceutical companies haven't done us well. Because when the ethnobotanists came down there to get information, we shared freely with them, right? Then they got back up home and then pretended they made it all up themselves and pretended that we were just some kind of grunting primitives. Mm-hmm. And he just pointed the way and they figured the rest out, but it didn't go down like that. And so because you took advantage of our trust, and we can Google when that year was. It was early to mid 90s. Anyway, they said, we want reparations for that.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Because we gave you precise information. And that same year, this dude named Mark Plotkin came down to the school I was working at. And he told the story of how one of dozens of stories, but his mentor told him this story once where they went down to look for a particular species of plant that they could not distinguish one from the other one variety from the other just by looking. They had to do it in a laboratory. And so they were asking these traditional healers, and they were in South America at this time, to help them identify the right species. And so as the story goes, in the middle of the night, the apprentice came, the native apprentice came and says, it's time for you guys to wake up. He says, what are you waking us up for? And the apprentice was shocked, says, we thought you guys knew something about plants. Don't you know that under the full moon, the different varieties that you want sing different songs? And that's how we tell them apart. And so like, yeah, right. So they gathered the plants, and sure enough, they had harvested and distinguished the right species from one another. So at this time, I'm a laboratory worker, and I'm doing this kind of work as well. And I'm also transitioning out of the laboratory, and happened to get it myself in a fix where I needed to, where I got evicted, okay? And at this point, I had a whole house full of houseplants. I mean, from front, I had a laboratory in my house and a house full of houseplants. And so I said, okay, I got to move fast, because I didn't know the law. I could have taken it a month if I had known the law. Anyway, so I wound up loading up my plants. And this is a story that I had in mind. Loaded up the houseplants into one of those storage units. But I was going to be staying way out in Alpharetta, which was almost a 40 mile drive from where I was storing the stuff. So I said, I'm not going to be able to come. I might not even be able to come back here for a month. And so I did the thing where I set up a thought form in the shed, in the storage room, that would feed and water and illuminate the plants, not having any idea if it would work.
Okay.
Do you not know that I came back 30 days later, opened that thing, and there were just as one or two plants had died, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody that's been around plants knows that if you cook cold plants in the dark, just in the dark for that long, they blanch out.
Right.
And the new growth is white until it can creep under and out into the sunlight.
Right.
Not only did the plants survive without light or water, they had grown.
Right? Really?
And lush green. So that was a convince for me that, okay, if you want to connect with the plants, there's a way to do it.
Yeah.
So when I do the gardening classes, and like, that is always the primary thing that I tell the students, just, you know, talk to them and be with them and share with them and listen to them as well. So this whole thing that we're doing with the food also translates into the live plants. And it's absolutely also a big part of foraging for food and that kind of stuff. I don't go slap happy with the identification. You know, I'm more precise, like process based when I do foraging with other people, especially. I make sure I know what, you know, I'm not the guy that's listening for the moonlight song. I don't want to mess up. But you know, I'm still growing in the process, right? But
right.
The fundamentals are there, and people can begin with that. In my opinion.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and I love how simple you made it. That is such an incredible example of how much I guess we misunderstand when it comes to plants and what they need and the way that we can support them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Well, you know, he's the plant whisperer. I mean, he's more than that. But I just want to throw that in there so you can bring that back in when we come back.
Oh, I will. Oh, Masa, thank you. Yes, I'm not surprised at all. And I think your official name will now be the plant whisperer on 1-2 Radio if you're okay with that.
I can live with that.
Definitely. Yeah, I think... I know we're running a little short on time. This hour has completely flown by, but I wanted to ask you both one more question. This dynamic of whether it's with food or with plants or the nature around us, is this something that you bring into readings when people call and once you listen, or are you ever pulled to say, oh my gosh, you need some more protein in your life, or whatever, that message that comes through of how people can support themselves. And I know we all communicate with energy and spirit differently in that sense. And it's something that pops up for me occasionally, not too frequently, but I'm curious if it's something that you've incorporated into the way that you can encourage people to connect with energy and spirit or anything like that.
I rarely do.
It's more of an in-person experience that you've had.
No, that's not. Even in person, I don't do that much advising. My approach is to remind people of the trust factor. And I say very often, Boss has heard me say it 1,000 times, if a rabbit in the field can figure out what to eat, how much better a human being? So I rarely advise off jump on what to eat or do. You know, my whole approach is to remind people of their connection with Source, and then to trust that you'll be guided to the right things. Now, sometimes if you have somebody with whose palate is really, really going in the wrong direction, I might give them some advice on how this is how you clear your palate. You might need to fast. You might need to do this or that or the other.
Sure.
But eventually, your instinct will kick in on a level where it will guide you to the right foods. And then I just provide the guardrails to say, okay, you know, no, maybe that's not the right answer. Go back and think about it, you know, or meditate on it again or something like that. But I tend to consciously avoid giving people advice on what to do.
I love that distinction.
Who are you being in the moment? It's more of an ontological approach. And my trust is in their ka, their life force. And then I just kind of watch. And a lot of times they'll come back and say, you know, I think I need to fast. Or you think, what do you think of this food or that? And then that's when I'll chime in.
Yeah.
Now, not everybody's cool. Like if I'm talking to some of my older loved ones or relatives, I'll just, you know, what do you think I should take? You know, then I'll say that. But then someone who's really in the flow of change and looking for, you know, their breakthrough, no, they get the regular figure it out kind of energy.
Connect with your own bond with Source. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because that's really what will support them long term is building that relationship. And that trust, so that you can really hear and listen. A lot of people hate
that approach now. I've lost clients because they're like, you should just tell me.
Like, well, people want the quick fix. Yeah. What's going to make me feel good today, right now? Yeah. I know. But it isn't what will support in the long term, a long term in that way.
And that's what we're looking for. We're looking to build a core of bright workers who are equipped for what's occurring now and equipped to answer what life is calling for in these times. And that any challenge that's presented is an opportunity to say, oh, let's use this as a way of leapfrogging into your highest sense of purpose, whatever the challenge is. So that's why it doesn't matter to me what they're facing. It's always an opportunity to say, if you use the techniques that we're sharing to wax this problem, then you can use them to do just about anything else you want to do along the lines of your purpose in answering what life is calling for.
Absolutely. So it is building those tools and that skill. Yeah. Absolutely. Ambassador, do you want to add anything in before we wrap up this part of your guys' 2-hour special?
Well, the only thing I want to add is, there has been times where Spirit says somebody needed peanut butter And it was at a time when it was, oh, no, no, eat peanuts, no nuts.com. And they, hey, that's what they were lacking. That's what that was going to give them the quickest fix. So, yeah, I have had that happen where I had to do it. And I did.
Sometimes it is as simple as that. You're not giving yourself this one thing that your body clearly needs.
Oh, yeah, I can chime in. Yeah. I've done that too, but it's not my preferred way. So I've done it too.
Yeah.
In fact,
well, I mean, it's so unique, right?
Doing it. Yeah. In the beginning, I started off saying, this is what you need to eat. These are the urges.
Right.
But it was later on that I switched.
Evolved into the long term solution. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't throw out the baby with the bathwater, but yeah.
Mombasa's right. Never. Yeah. Yeah. I will say I have had some people who are just asking for the quick fix and saying, I just feel like crap right now. What do I need? And sometimes it's like, okay, if that's what you want, go eat a burger.
And sometimes it's right on time. It's like you wouldn't deny somebody who's bleeding a Band-Aid.
Right. Of course. Yeah. And so it is so unique in that situation to each individual person. Connecting with what they need, with the support that they need in that moment.
Precisely.
All right, you two. Well, that was our, I think we're wrapping up our part one here. And then the two of you are going to take us into Fresh 55 for the second hour of this 2-hour special. So everybody listening.
Oh, no, you're not coming? I thought we were all doing Fresh 55 here.
I thought Oh, you did? Okay, I can jump in for 30 minutes of it or so, and then I'm gonna let you guys finish it up. But, and I know I want to let you guys get into your flow as well, because I absolutely loved what you were able to dive into last time. But everybody listening, let me just jump into the chat room real quick. It looks like we have just a couple other people saying hi, before we switch over. And let me see who's here. We've got, oh, Shell is in the chat room. Thank you for coming and listening in with us. I always love having you here. And Renee says, Mombasa and the Plant Whisperer. Yes, it is the new, well, we may have to make that official and put that in the banner as well. Okay, you guys. Well, everybody, stay tuned for Fresh 55 with Russell and Mombasa, starting at the top of the hour. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Life Journeys with Serena on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you listen to the world. Stay tuned, everybody.